Ladies and gentlemen, the Epic Film Guys Podcast. Yeah, and then whenever you're ready, just sound check me if you will, please.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather.
Works for me. All right.
Seven Saudi soldiers sodomized seven Syrian diplomats.
Oh my god.
Now, the human torch was denied a bank loan.
The way that we're going to break it up is we'll do like kind of like we did with the Arrival review as well. Like we split off spoilers and then we played them after the end credits of that show. So That'll be the same way that I do it for this. So anything that's spoilerish, we'll steer clear of until those specific questions come up. So for instance, I didn't even know that fucking CGI Tarkin was going to be in the movie or Leia. Or
yeah, me neither.
That they were gonna like copy paste characters wholesale from A New Hope into the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like Red Leader and
Gold
Leader.
Yeah, it was
kind
of a weird choice, but
it was a really weird choice because as soon as I heard the lines and as soon as I like saw the cuts of them,
Leader standing by.
I was like, these are the exact shots from A New Hope.
Yeah.
Like, literally those exact
shots.
Well,
he just always gives his call sign the same way, you know? That's military precision. And he uses the same call sign on every mission, because they're not at all worried about them catching on that, like, those ones are the guys who are in command.
So, yeah, so we'll avoid spoilers on, like, specific characters that pop up in the film.
Dude, I was so happy that James Earl Jones came back to do Vader.
Yeah, so was I. Even though, I mean, that dude's definitely getting on in years and you could kind of hear it in his voice, but it was still great to have him back.
Are you going to be fucking vaping the whole time?
No, I mute when we record and I do it.
Why don't you just take the next step and suck a dick?
Oh my god. Alright, so we'll roll in and then I probably won't even, whatever like intro we end up even using, I probably won't even use it, but I will, you know, most of what I'm going to do is your audio is mostly what I'm going to keep because I'm just going to cut it in when I ask these same questions to the table.
Yeah.
During the recording, so then I'm just going to kind of cut your thoughts in here and there. All right. So what I say really isn't important, although some of it will almost certainly end up in the outtakes.
You want to bet?
Oh, my God. All right. So we're going live in 5, 4, 3, 2... Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this very special recording of the Epic Film Guys podcast. A little blurb, a little piece. Get up on out of here with my eye holes.
Nick, I need you to understand that I have a couple of eye holes.
I have this many eye holes.
I'm going to rub our eye holes together.
If that guy catches
you
in a box
with any of his eye holes, he jumps through the window and beats the shit out of you. But it's totally worth it.
They
melt in
your
mouth.
Morty. And the voice you are hearing is Mr. Caleb Brownlee, not only one of the co-hosts of the Netflix and Swill podcast, who are wonderful supporters of ours, but also a very, very good friend of mine. Mr. Brownlee, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm just Jim Dandy. Little cold. You know, I feel like it's Hoth up in this bitch.
Topical.
Yeah. A little on the nose.
How's definitely it going, not. You're definitely not strolling down the side of a lava pool on Mustafar.
Yeah.
Prequel.
You were supposed to be the chosen one.
Did you have the high ground?
Annie, are you okay?
Oh my God! No, I am doing fantastic, and of course, Caleb's recording here with us tonight because, unfortunately, because of his job and because of his schedule, he's actually not able to make the roundtable that we will be recording tomorrow night. So, thank you very much for setting aside this time and lending your immeasurable talents to the Epic Film Guys podcast. We're thrilled to have you.
Yeah, I feel like you could probably measure my talents with a yardstick, but I'll take the compliment.
I love you anyway. So essentially what we're going to do here is I've got a number of different questions. Now, my review is already live. Did you read my review, by the way?
I skimmed it. Sorry.
No, that's okay. You don't need to have read my review to really... I used my review as a basis for the questions that I wanted to ask because I feel like they were things that everybody else would want to talk about. So
I'll use my watching process of the movie as a basis for my answers.
Get up on out of here.
Give me my damn enchiladas.
I'm Gazorpazorp fucking field, bitch.
I mean, I don't get it. Wouldn't the car just win every time? Go eat some shit, you fucking stupid bitch. Just kidding.
My God, are you friends with that guy? You know he eats his own shit, right?
Oh shit, we got tiny people.
Go eat some fucking shit, you stupid fucking bitch. Just kidding.
We got tiny lasagna, tiny pizza, tiny pie,
tiny
fried eggs. Oh shit, we got tiny people.
Is this what happens when Netflix and Swell records? It's that girl with the shit all over her face, like Worf from Star Trek.
Oh man, how did she get there? Is that something we need to worry about?
Just stay away from the coffee machine. Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's great to finally be able to get some time set aside to be on the show.
Yeah, and we've been talking at least very, very much in the preliminary stages anyway about doing a crossover proper with Netflix and Swill. I don't really know what we would do in terms of it. I don't know. I guess it would depend on whose show we're going to be on. And
yeah, I kind of was hoping for me and Justin to be able to work together since we're kind of more the horror movie guys.
Yeah. And I think we did try to put together that, that host swap idea a couple months ago. And unfortunately Justin's schedule didn't allow for it. So the whole thing kind of fell through. I still think that would be a fantastic idea
too.
Yeah. But I do still think that would be a fantastic idea. Of course, Dan's been on the show a couple of times and we love having him over and we've been trying to get you on the show for
somebody's got to take care of him.
Yeah. No, right.
Please take my wife.
Oh my God. So we are going to go ahead. We're going to jump into a lot of different questions here about Rogue One. And in order to avoid, there's been a number of issues that we've had, at least I feel recently, where we get these reviews and we just kind of go on and on and on for 45 minutes about loving the film, about the same things over and over and over and over and over again. So that's why I kind of came up with this format for this round table, as it were, to kind of split it up. And then, you know, once I prompt a question, I'll pitch it to somebody and let them take it. And then if anybody else has anything to add to it, they can do so. And then if anybody disagrees, they can, you know, kind of vouch their disagreement. Maybe we can get a little back and forth there. But overall, I just want to kind of
in an attempt to just throw a wrench into your plans, I'm going to attempt to just rephrase all of the questions as my answer.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. You are a real familiar looking cat, though. You're Mr. Sword. Before I
Eighth
kick
note,
your
treble
ass.
Clef, burn this square.
Before I kick your ass, there's something you should know. I fucking hate jazz music.
Well, what the fuck are you looking at? Oh, God. Did you like the intro to our Halloween episode where we did Dead Flicks and Kill?
Oh, yes. I fucking love that. I still love the intro to the... I love the intro to the one-star review segment because you guys adapted the whole homage to...
This week's story is about a dad who really fucked up.
It's called Honey, I Killed Our Son. Shows change, man. Bitches.
The other, now it's a the fucking other thing narrative that I liked show. A lot. The other thing I liked a lot was when we did our Dead Snow, and I played the clip, and it was like, what's your favorite thing? Zombies. What's your least favorite thing? Nazis. Oh, shit. And then I played, like, the Nazi yell fucking Hitler speech over, like, the sound of the Japanese ghost.
Goddamn fucking Corey. How can you hate Dead Snow?
He's a cunt.
It was so fucking good. Especially the second one. I was fucking dying. Like, when that tank blew up that baby, I was fucking on the floor.
Yeah. Dude, I about shit.
All right, so.
Well, I wonder, would you like to talk about Star Wars?
Fuck it.
Eh. It was fine. Copyright, hang on, Ryan Loy, 2016.
Hang on a second. Just keep recording. Just hang on.
Nah, I'm going to stop.
Okay. All right. So you didn't really stop recording, did you?
No.
Okay, good. All right. So, okay. All right. So
Nintendo reportedly sold 196,000 NES Classic Edition consoles last month.
Jesus Christ.
That's a big number.
That's a lot.
Good for them. Aw, good for you.
I can't believe the markup and prices that fucking people are selling those things for on, like, eBay and shit.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, next month when another shipment gets here, there'll be fucking, like, there'll be more of them around than people who actually wanted one.
Well, it was just like, it was like with the Ecto Cooler. Like, it, right, like when it first came out in the summer, like, people were selling it on eBay for a few hundred bucks and getting paid for it. And then, like, I went to the fucking Price Chopper and bought mine for $3.
Works. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I still haven't gotten any Ecto Cooler. Are they still making it?
I don't know if they're still making it or not, but you could probably find it somewhere just because I think, like, the whole hype of it was, like, everybody, the people that wanted it, like, clamored for it and ran and got it.
Yeah.
And then it was over.
That's why I figured I would just wait.
Yeah. I don't know if they're still making it or not. I don't know how long they actually plan to put it in production for. So, all right, let's get going here. All right. So, basically, first question I have is, right off the top of the film, starts without the traditional logo or the opening crawl. And for me, this really, really prepared me for something different Star Wars-wise. So, did you have the same experience?
Yeah, I thought it was good. They don't do kind of the... Not to call it ham-fisted, like, it's a classic thing that all the Star Wars films began with, but like you said, right out of the gate, you know that this is a different experience. So the one kind of little nod that they have to it is just the opening scene where it says, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
And then it cuts directly into the cold open, and you don't even get the title screen until a few minutes in.
Yeah, you know, Williams score cool. to open it up. No crawl, no nothing. So yeah, I like I said, for me that really helped to kind of establish that I was about to experience something really, really different out of this.
Yeah,
film.
And like you said, with the Williams score, even just in general about the score, they had notes of it in there, but they largely had an original score just for this film, and that really tied it all together that this was something new and unique.
Yeah, I think Giacchino did an amazing job with the score. It still had that kind of
I loved it.
Williams signature. It still had the trumpets, the high horns and everything like that that Williams is definitely very famous for.
It sounded like Star Wars.
Yeah, it absolutely did, but it also felt a little bit different. The only times you really heard those classic themes were at a couple different points in the film, like when Bail Organa shows up at the One Rebel meeting, they play the theme from A New Hope, which absolutely leveled me, and it was great to see Jimmy Smits come back in that role, reprising it from Revenge of the Sith, which was a nice tie-in. But speaking of characters, I want to jump right over to my next question here. Star of the show was Felicity Jones as Jyn Erso. What did you think of her character? What did you think of her character arc?
I thought it was really good. Definitely, I like with this and with... excuse me. Goddamn. Ah. With both Rogue One and The Force Awakens, I like that, you know, the lead character is a female. I think that sends a positive message where, you know, it's not just Star Wars for boys anymore. You know?
It's not just an old boys club, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, she's really a character who, you know, any young person, male or female, can look up to and kind of see as a role model. So I thought that was really cool. Yeah, you mentioned... Bail Organa, Jimmy Smits in there. I just wanted to point out he's one of the best characters on The Get Down, which you haven't watched yet, and I have not.
No, it's still in the queue, as it were, which is a very, very long queue. Unfortunately, but yeah, going back to Felicity Jones, what did you think of her performance in the role? Did you like it? Did you dislike it?
I thought it was really good. Definitely, you know, she starts out as kind of the unwilling hero, you know. It's sort of the classic, like, hero's arc where at first she doesn't really necessarily even want to be there, but by the end of it she recognizes, you know, the worthiness of the cause, and this really becomes a soldier story about, you know, sacrifice and about making sure that you're looking out for the greater good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with you 100%. I really felt like the film did a great job of kind of showcasing how circumstances were just kind of thrust upon her. Like, this was definitely not in her character at the beginning of this film, and then she really just kind of had to adapt very quickly to the circumstances as they played out. And I think...
And you could tell, like, at certain points, it really rattled her. Like, more so than any other Star Wars film, this is a war film.
It is, and I've got to take my hat off time and time and time again to director Gareth Edwards in this film. I've got a question or two about him a little bit later here in the list, so we'll definitely come back to him. But I absolutely loved what he did with Godzilla in 2014. I had my misgivings with that film, a couple of them, but I still thought it was really fantastic for what he was setting out to do. And I feel like this film, he wanted to make a Star Wars war film, and I really, really felt like he achieved that in this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, so moving on from Jyn and talking about the other characters that are just in the Rogue One crew, you know, which of those characters did you like the most? And, you know, if there were any that you disliked, which ones did you dislike?
Much in the vein of BB-8. K2SO is the greatest character ever, and he absolutely stole the show.
Yeah, I loved him. God, he was good.
Also, he's voiced by Alan Tudyk, who was Wash in Firefly, which was really cool. I didn't realize that until the credits rolled, but... Yeah, no, the whole crew was really cool. Donnie Yen as the sort of Shaolin monk was really cool, because I was really worried about this film initially, that I thought it was just going to be another, like, Jedi free-for-all.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't really make sense for, like, the time and setting of this, but I was happy that they were able to have somebody in there who was more or less a Force user, but wasn't a Jedi, and just kind of...
He just kind of followed followed the teachings of the Force, and kind of, you know, almost like the Force was his religion. So, yeah, I mean, he wasn't a Jedi in that he wielded a lightsaber or used Force powers, but he definitely still kind of clung to that mantra.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that's sort of canon within Star Wars itself, is that, you know, it is sort of a religious doctrine for a lot of people, because, you know, most of the people shown in Star Wars who say, "May the Force be with you," are not Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, it's just something that's an innate belief that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Gareth Edwards, and, you know, he's a fantastic up-and-coming talent, and this film has only further cemented that. I can't wait to see what he's going to do next. But one of the biggest things that he really does well, and he did it great in Godzilla as well, is scale. Like, this sense of scale. So we got a lot of really, really great, great shots of the Death Star in this film. What were some of your favorite shots or favorite moments in the film where you got to see scale?
Oh, my absolute favorite shot in this film was during the kind of climactic battle scene where one of the soldiers in the Rogue One crew grabs the rocket launcher and fires it at the AT-AT walker.
Oh, yes.
And the rocket just slams into the side of its head, and it, like, tips to the side, and then it just slowly turns its head back, like, that it, you know? That was just such a cool moment, just showing the overwhelming power of this, you know, military machine that they were up against.
That armor's too strong for rockets.
Our shield can't repel firepower to margin. The other moment really for that aspect that really stood out for me was also the most important scene in this film, where Director Krennic, who is the main villain here, walks out into, like, they're on board the Death Star, and walks up to Grand Moff Tarkin from the original A New Hope. But there's this big, like, bay window that he's standing in front of, and you see the planet down below, and you just got this really powerful sense of how just, like, the magnitude of this weapon, that, you know, they're standing in a place that, you know, that planet that's down below them, they could flick a switch and it would just cease to exist.
Yeah, it really kind of helps spell out, like you said, the destructive power of the weapon, and also, like, the insignificance of the, you know, the insignificance with which the Empire views life, like the life on that planet, like, because they could snuff it out, like you said, by flipping a switch.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I really think, and like, one of my favorite shots in the film is, again, in the climactic battle when the Death Star arrives and it appears on the horizon, like, and it's just kind of over the horizon line, so you just kind of see the top dome with the weapon dish there in the side. Man, that's such a fantastic shot. It's a chilling shot. There's a lot of really chilling shots in this film.
Oh, yeah. No, but going back to that scene with Tarkin and Krennic, the reason that that's the most important scene in this film is because Krennic is asking when they'll get to display the power of the Death Star, to which Tarkin replies, "When has become now." And I was like, did they just fucking reference Spaceballs in Rogue One? Like, are they going to go get a copy of Rogue One, the video cassette, and fast forward it to see how they defeat the rebels?
Think about it. I mean, they wouldn't even have to fast forward. It's one of those jokes, not to get off on too big of a Spaceballs tangent, but I think newer generations, that joke would just be lost on, because they can just go to scene selection and just skip to different scenes.
Yeah.
They didn't have that joy and luxury. That was like one of the most funniest things about Spaceballs, is they're sitting there watching it fast forward. The Dark Helmet, you know, Rick, the immortal
Rick Moranis. Fast forwarding, sir.
No, go past this part. In fact, never show this again.
We're at now.
When will then be now?
Go back to then. We can't. Why? We just passed it. When? Now. Just now. When will then be now?
Soon.
Soon. These Spaceballs references hitting for anybody?
It's Spaceballs, man. Spaceballs is the one movie, I've always said this, Spaceballs is the one movie that every single person on the planet should have in their movie collection.
Because
it's just that good. But getting back to Star Wars, and you had mentioned, of course, Director Krennic, or as I like to refer to him, Director Brennick.
Yeah, he's about at that mopey.
But
why doesn't anybody recognize my achievements?
He was played by Ben Mendelsohn in the film, and in terms of, you talked about scene-stealing performances with Alan Tudyk earlier, and I think that Mendelsohn also really stole the show whenever he was on screen. He was such a fantastic villain. What did you think of him?
I absolutely agree. No, he was a bit different from other villains, where he's not, like, his main villainous characteristic isn't so much that he's just insidiously evil. He's more complex than that. Like, his main villainous characteristic is just his ambition. So he doesn't care, you know, who he has to kill or who he steps on to climb the ladder. He just really wants to move up within this organization and grab as much power for himself as he can, which makes him a very dangerous and unpredictable person.
It speaks to his, you know, of course, we know from the trailers that Vader does appear in this film, so we get a scene with Director Krennic going to see Darth Vader, and just the fact that you can get an audience with Darth Vader, I think, really speaks to his level. You know, I mean, even no matter how high he is, I think, in the Imperial hierarchy, the fact that he would straight up go to Vader and be like, hey, you know, like, I really think that speaks to his character as well.
He shows up to Vader with demands.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Dear God, the stone's on you.
Yeah, he was absolutely, I would honestly say he was probably my favorite character in the film, just because of how great Ben Mendelsohn played the role. Ben Mendelsohn just knocked it out of the park as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
He fucking rocked it out.
All right, well, but moving on from the performances then to kind of the overall visual experience.
Hold on. Oh. You missed one. Forrest Whitaker is amazing in this movie.
See, I loved Forrest Whitaker in this film. I love Forrest Whitaker in anything. I could watch him paint dry.
I'm
I think
a
he's
huge
a fantastic
fan.
Actor. But I really felt like the Saw Gerrera character was kind of unnecessary, and I just feel like they didn't do nearly as much as they could or should have with it, and it just left me underwhelmed. I love what Whitaker did with what he had, but my God, do I wish he had more.
Yeah, I don't know. He was just sort of a side character, but for me, that was fine. Like, I think his whole arc, even though it was short and possibly not as fleshed out as I would have liked to see it, It really was just there to kind of highlight that there's, you know, there's strife within the rebellion itself. Like, not everybody's pulling in the same direction. So really, until, you know, the events of this film, the rebellion isn't a cohesive entity. Like, they're as concerned with fighting amongst themselves as they are with fighting the Empire.
Yeah, which is kind of, I love that they brought that levity to it. I love that was included in the film, because that's not the picture that you get of the rebels at all. Like, you just kind of get this scrappy group of people who are just desperate to try to do anything they can to defeat the Empire. There's never any infighting in the original films. It's all, you know, they're all focused on the task at hand. And I really thought it was a fantastic kind of exploration of the deeper rebellion when they have that big council at the end and they're trying to decide what to do and they're all bickering and arguing back and forth, and I think that's fantastic.
Only that, but there's actually good guys killing good guys in this movie because they disagree over things. Like,
yeah, very true. And then, yeah, I mean, to round out characters then, because it also reminded me of another one, Mads Mikkelsen as Galen Erso. How did you feel about him?
Yeah, he was pretty cool. Another character that you know, he's a little less used, but he, of course, is the engineer who designed the Death Star and snuck the plans into the hands of the Rebellion. But no, he was really cool. That's he's an actor that, you know, I always like whenever he pops up in something. Like, of course, he was in Doctor Strange this year, and
yep.
He was in was he in Contact with Jodie Foster?
No, he may have been. God, it's been so long since I've seen that movie.
I thought, nah, that doesn't seem right. it's just somebody who looks like him, I think.
All right, and now to move on from the characters, I wanted to get into kind of the overall visual experience of the film. And, you know, a lot of, we talked about already with the scale, but they really wanted to go for that kind of ground war perspective in this film, as well as the space battle. We definitely got a space battle in the film. But overall, the visual experience of this film, what kind of impression did that leave on you? How did you feel about the overall visual presentation?
The battle scenes definitely were stunning in it. You know, it really feels like, of course, I saw this in 3D, so, you know, there's just shit flying around, and it really felt like you're just on the ground with the soldiers, you know. Like, it did a pretty good job, in my opinion, of just kind of pulling you into that and making you feel nervous, I guess, rather than just casually watching the movie. Like, even though going into it, like, you know what's going to happen because none of these people are in A New Hope.
Yeah.
But you still really worry about the fate of these characters, which, you know, says a lot about how much they were able to accomplish in just 2 hours.
Yeah, and I really think it speaks to the talent of Edwards as a director that he can ratchet up the tension in scenes where you already know their outcome. Like, you know they're going to steal the Death Star plans. That's just the entire point and purpose of this film. But the fact that I was still inching toward the edge of my seat as these scenes continue, especially that climactic battle, the whole third act of this movie is fantastic as far as I'm concerned. And just the way that the tension continues to build, and you know what's going to happen, but you're still so invested in it. And like I said, I absolutely credit that to Edwards and the team. Just their ability to drag that out of it, I think, was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, and how well, I mean, this was meant really to kind of be a prelude or prequel, if you will, to A New Hope. You know, so how do you feel that this film tied into the events of A New Hope? I mean, in terms of the production design, in terms of the plot, do you feel like it did a good job, or do you feel like it was missing something?
No, it definitely goes right in, you know, it falls right in line with everything in A New Hope, and I'm just really glad that they finally went back and made a prequel to A New Hope so that you know kind of the story leading up to it, because they've never made a prequel to the original Star Wars trilogy. It was about time someone did it.
It was,
know?
About time. And I absolutely agree.
And it was good.
You know,
I mean, they could have really butchered a prequel to Star Wars, but thankfully that didn't happen.
Yeah, thankfully the job was done right the first time. But, you know, one of the things that I came away with in my review, one of the things that I really felt was when you watch A New Hope now, after watching the events of this film, I really feel like it's going to carry so much more, like, dramatic weight and like, kind of more thematic heft as, you know, Luke is flying down that trench and Obi-Wan says, use the Force, and he puts the viewfinder away and fires that shot. Death Star blows up. I really feel like now, after watching Rogue One, those events are going to have so much more weight. So it's going to feel so much more like elating for that to have happened.
And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about this film and wanted to point out is that, you know, in the original Star Wars trilogy, it has more of like kind of an aspect of legend where, you know, these are the unconquerable titans of the universe, you know, like they like they'll always win because they're the good guys. They're the powerful ones, yeah. You know? And you don't really get a sense in the original films of, like, sure, Porkins dies, but, like, that doesn't really carry a lot of weight, no pun intended, because... just because, like, you don't really get a sense of their sacrifice meaning a whole lot. Because, of course, the heroes are going to win. That's how the movie works. But in this, like I mentioned earlier, like, this really is a film about sacrifice and, you know, what it really means to be a hero. Because Jin and the rest of the Rogue One crew, they're not doing it for themselves. Like, none of them are going to be to get to go back and be the big hero, you know.
Yeah, you especially get that feeling out of Diego Luna as Cassian. You know, he has that amazing scene with Jin when they're on the ship, and he's, you know, this has been my whole life, this rebellion has been my whole life.
Yeah, and he says he's been fighting since he was six.
Yeah, amazing. The character work in this film, I think, is one of its absolutely strongest aspects. And speaking of that, we're going to now shift into spoiler territory. And the spoilers, of course, will appear after the end credits of this week's episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. But, Caleb, everybody fucking died.
Yeah. No, this...
If you listen to last week's episode of the show, I when Justin and I were talking about it at the top of the episode, I was like, I guarantee you one of these characters is going to show up in a future Star Wars film in some way, shape, or form.
Nope.
Not anymore.
Nope. I mean, Mon Mothma did.
Yeah, we already know what we're going to see her again, though. You know, I think I loved all the character deaths. I think all the character deaths were really, really well done. The one that was the most poignant to me, of course, was Jin and Cassian at the end, as that explosion, that massive, massive fireball is just erupting on the horizon, and they're just, yeah, like, sitting there on the beach.
They actually fired the Death Star and blew up the city.
Jesus Christ. Like, what a powerful, powerful scene that was. And the tragedy of the whole moment strikes you right then and there, but then you realize, like, it's just like you were talking about a minute ago, sacrifice. The sacrifice that they've made to ensure that these plans get into rebel hands so that they can take this thing down and destroy it. And I, like I said, I think that when you watch A New Hope again, one of the things that's going to come back into your mind now when you watch it is that scene of these two on the beach and that fireball erupting and just kind of taking them out. And like that great scene of Donnie Yen when he's clutching his staff and he's just walking through the crowd. He's like, I am one with the Force and the Force is one with me, as he's walking through all that fire to get to the switch that he has to pull or whatever. Such a fantastic scene.
So that the transmission can go through. Yeah, absolutely. Now, like the whole, like you said, the entire third act of this film just absolutely blew me away.
All right, and speaking of people dying, we really, really can't go any further without talking about the second Vader scene that we got in this film, which I told Justin after we watched it. Justin,
sorry, my dick can only get so hard.
I know, and that's what I told Justin, because he, you know how we always talk about, I like to give him cinema blue balls. Well, he was texting me after the show, and he's like, are you going to tell me anything? Are you just going to make me wait, give me cinema blue balls? And I was like, I'll tell you one thing. I'm still cleaning my pants out after that fucking final scene.
So here's the thing with Darth Vader. Compared to, like, comparing Rogue One to Star Wars, like, the original trilogy, like, he was a puppy in the other movies compared to this. Like, for the first time, you really get the sense of his evil and just what a torturous existence he lives. Because there's that one shot with him in the
tank
chemical vat.
Yeah, and then that tank.
And like, it's this weird, like, almost Cronenberg body horror moment.
Yeah,
where it just shows how mangled he is. But yeah, absolutely. Like the end where they're trying to, they have the disc with the plans, and they're trying to get it, you know, out and get it away and, you know, get it to the main rebel forces. And Vader busts in and it's just wasting dudes left and right. Like,
I
just, he's just so fucking insidious in that scene.
I swear to Christ, it blew me away. I swear to, like, I teared up. I had fucking chills running down my spine. Like, my jaw fell open. Like, that's probably one of the best scenes, like, out of any Star Wars movie ever. Like,
oh yeah,
beyond compare. I mean, it was incredible. And you're absolutely right. We haven't really seen that. Even if you go back to, like, what they did.
Well, just like the sense of confinement and panic that they were able to convey with just that 1 minute shot was just chilling.
Oh man, and like I love that it wasn't just a lightsaber either. He like grabbed people with the force, and like that one dude, he like throws him against
slammed
the ceiling,
him into the roof,
and then it fucking cuts him in half. Like, oh my god, I came in my pants. I think I really did, because it was so good. It was
that's the other
incredible
thing about Rogue One. This movie is ultra fucking violent.
It really is, and I mentioned that in my review too. Like, I feel like out of any Star Wars movie, like I feel like the blaster shots hit harder. Like the impact, like of the battles, like you felt it like as an audience member more. Like they focused on it a little bit tighter, and it was just a little more visceral than you get, because you get that kind of fun spacefaring adventure kind of feeling in the main saga films. But this film, they really got to kind of play up that war aspect of it, and he brutalized it. He really played it for what it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was so pleased that they got, that they got James Earl Jones to come back for Vader. Like, once I heard the voice in the parts where he's actually speaking, that really just ratcheted it up that extra notch.
Yeah, be careful not to choke on your aspirations, Director Brennick.
What a great delivery.
Oh, man.
I love, he just, like, runs around choking dudes left and right. And that's why, like, I was glad that Vader goes and, like, just whoops ass, basically, in that final shot. Because throughout all of the scenes with Vader in all of the Star Wars films, he really only ever uses his force powers on his allies. Like,
Oh my God.
I think there was one rebel that he choked, but he actually picked him up with his hand in A New Hope.
It's like it's really funny.
Everybody he force choked was an Imperial officer.
Think about the juxtaposition of this scene in Star Wars canon. So this is directly preceding the events of A New Hope. So you get this amazing scene of Vader cutting people down left and right, going apeshit, mowing his way through people. And then they get the plans to the TNT-4. It escapes. And then they capture the TNT-4 over Tatooine, like immediately preceding that. Or immediately following that, excuse me. And then you get Vader kind of walking into that ship, and he's just kind of a pussycat at that point. Like, he picks up the one dude, like you said, and he chokes him. He wants to go to the planes.
You're part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
And he just throws him against the wall, but that's all he does in that scene. And it's like, huh.
I'm a part of the Imperial Senate on a
diplomatic mission to Alderaan.
On a diplomatic mission to Alderaan. I got tongue twisted.
Oh my god. Well, speaking of Vader, you know, of course, we had other characters from A New Hope show up in this. We did talk about Tarkin briefly earlier.
Well, and yeah, before we dive into that though, I just wanted to ask you.
Oh, sure.
What did you think of this, just kind of as a cap to the Darth Vader character? Because in all likelihood, this is going to be the last time we ever see him on the big screen.
Yeah, and I actually had the good opportunity. Justin was in town for the weekend because, you know, he had to come up and do Christmas with his dad's side of the family, I think. And, you know, we were talking about it, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. It really, really kind of hones in on just, like, first of all, in that first scene with Mendelsohn, you got the menace of that character back. You know, you really got the kind of the power that he commands just as a presence, you know. And then granted, you got to see Christensen mowing people down in the prequels as, you know, pre-suit Vader, but you've never gotten to see Vader
even
himself.
Even the younglings.
I can't watch anymore. But yeah, it's
you're breaking my heart.
It's so incredible, and it really this character has had this badass, amazing legacy for 40 years, and this cements it like perfectly. I really think that final scene, Edwards knew that they had to send this character off with the biggest bang possible, and what a bang it was. Just incredible. Oh, yeah. Just incredible.
Like I said, he's just so, like, he just sees evil in this. Like, he's just insidious, and you really, for the first time, like, get the full sense of what he's capable of.
Yeah. That's, oh my God. Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's another thing Justin and I were talking about yesterday. This probably will be the last time we'll ever see him on the big screen, because, yeah, we've got that Han Solo prequel coming up, but there's absolutely no reason he would show up in that, you know, unless they decided to do some kind of a film focusing somewhere in the dead space between episodes 3 and 4. Yeah. But, you know, I really feel like that's something that they've done with the Rebels TV show. They're doing it with, like, the... There's comic book lines that they've been doing now that Disney bought Star Wars, that Marvel's been releasing all these Star Wars comics where they're doing different stuff back in that era. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think this is the last time we're going to see him. And what a great way to go out. Like, talk about going out on top.
Yeah. He was the real MVP.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, as I said, talking about other characters that showed up in this film from A New Hope, The second, Caleb, that CGI Tarkin fucking turned around from that window, and this was a motion capture performance, and they, you know, replaced the face digitally. I think, and I've had some flack for this already, but I've been talking to people about it, but, you know, I think that the effects themselves were fantastic, but the problem is that so much else in this film was practical. They did practical sets. They had tons of actual people in costume, that the CGI Tarkin stood out like a sore fucking thumb for me. He took me out of the movie every single time I laid eyes on him. And I thought the voice acting, I thought the presence of the character, the look of the character, the voice acting, I thought everything was spot on, but it just pulled me out of the film. It really stood out as, yeah, that's fake as fuck. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. Given that, you know, it's the Death Star and Grand Moff Tarkin had command of it in A New Hope.
Yeah.
Like,
I think you have to put him in the movie. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. He has to be in it, but
everybody else that they, like, photoshopped in probably shouldn't have been there.
I want to talk about one character.
Tarkin needed to be in this film.
I wanted to talk about one character that should have been in this fucking film that wasn't. You had Goldleader. No. You had Goldleader show up. You had Redleader show up.
Wicket the Ewok.
Where the fuck was Porkins in that fucking battle?
No, he was in it. He just didn't get fat yet. Like, immediately after the events of Rogue One, he got real depressed because his wife left him and just started eating.
And of course, longtime fans will know how big a fan we are on the Epic Film Guys podcast of old William Hootkins.
Jack Porkins is the greatest.
Yeah, no CGI Porkins fucking really filling out that cockpit in an X-Wing.
The motherfucker was pushing max density. He was about to fucking fly down the ventilation shaft himself and collapse that Death Star like a neutron star.
Oh, God, I'm choking. I'm laughing so hard.
He could have just drove his X-Wing into it and just started chewing.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, the only other one in the film, and, you know, we talked before we started recording about copy-pasting Red Leader and Gold Leader directly from A New Hope. I mean, literally, their expressions are the same. These are the scenes of those characters in the cockpit from A New Hope. No question. Same lines, same everything. And that bugged me. But it didn't bug me nearly as much as really shitty CGI'd cross-eyed Leia did at the end of the film.
I see what you did there, and also over there.
She spins around and she has the Death Star plans in her hand and she goes, "Hope!"
If they would have just shown her from the back, that would have been
fine. And that's what I was hoping they were going to do. That's really what I was hoping they were going to do.
As soon as she turned around, I was like, ah, god damn it.
Yeah, the CJ, and I can give Tarkin a pass because, as you said, he belongs in this film. You really can't not have him in the film, at least in some way. But Leia didn't really need to be in this film.
With Leia, my immediate reaction was, huh, Carrie Fisher didn't age too bad.
Oh, my God. Yeah, as soon as I saw her, I was just like, no. Like, and when they showed her, when, you know, Bail Organa is walking up to her to give her the plans, and her back is to the camera, and I'm like, okay, this is perfect. Just leave her back to the camera, and he hands her the plans, and that's where the film ends. Nope.
And then she turns.
She turns around.
Yeah, like, that shot would have been perfect, and yeah, I agree. That was a big letdown.
So overall, Caleb, just, you know, I finished up all my questions, so thank you very, very much for going through all of that with me. But, you know,
absolutely.
I just wanted to get your final rating on the film. You know, where do you think, where do you rate this film? Like, what's your score? And B, out of all the Star Wars films, where do you think you place this?
Well, before I dive into my final rating on this, there's one little negative that I wanted to point out with this film, which is, you know, the Star Wars films all throughout the whole saga, you know, they've been known for these big moments, like, you know, Luke's acceptance of, like, the hero's journey, basically, whenever his parents are killed, and he has this moment where, like, yes, I will learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi. Like, the showdown on the Death Star, like, the trench run, like, the Battle of Hoth. Like, there's all these big moments that really just, from the start, pull you right into this and get you invested. Mm-hmm. I kept waiting for that moment with this film. And not to say that it wasn't good or to take anything away from it, but I didn't really get that big punch moment until the third act of this, where it really just took off and ran wild.
I actually had the exact same reaction to it, and I was talking to Justin about it yesterday, and honestly, I probably would have ended up rating this film maybe a 5 or a 6 if the film's pace and the film's kind of, you know, the exposition and everything, if it had kept the way it was in the first two acts of the film. I thought they were both a little clunky. I thought they were both a little slow, and they both took a little bit of time to find their footing. And then finally, it finally did. And then when you get to Act 3, it completely saves this entire film, as far as I'm concerned. It is so good that it ripples back, like, through everything else. And, like, I don't even really care about whatever happened before it, because that third act is just so good. But I really feel like some of these characters could have used a little bit more development. I mean, you've got a runtime here of 2 hours and 15 minutes. So it's a question then of how long does this film really need to be? You know, and I understand it from that perspective. But at the same time, I just feel like those first two acts were pretty clunky and pretty slow. And then in the third act, Caleb, this thing turned into an amazing Star Wars movie. Like, bar none.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I understand everybody's complaints with The Force Awakens, but I loved The Force Awakens. Like, I liked it a lot. And it really kind of brought back the magic that was Star Wars that I remembered from when I was a kid. But, you know, I was getting really worried about halfway through this film about, you know, watching a mediocre Star Wars film. So I'm glad that that third act was so strong. But, yeah, like, the look was there, the feel of it was there. Like, this definitely was Star Wars through and through, but I just would have liked to have seen, you know, more of just a big moment, like a big story moment in the opening part of this film that would have, you know, pulled me right into that world like the other films did.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you just don't get it. But, I mean, to go back to what we were talking about very early on when we were discussing it, that plays right into the different feeling that they wanted to give this film. They didn't want it to feel like a normal film in the numbered saga. They wanted it to feel like its own thing. And I mean, in that regard, I think they succeeded fantastically. I really, really think it does. It still has the feeling of Star Wars, especially that third act, but the slow pace of it, you know, it's a very slow burn at the beginning. Like I said, I some of the subplots and everything
but the
in the beginning
is there, and the payoff.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The payoff is there, and that's I rated the film an 8 out of 10. I really, really think it's absolutely fantastic. I really think that this will please even the people that were detractors of The Force Awakens, of which, you know, I am one.
And you're wrong, but we'll get into that another time.
Dynafire. I really, really feel like, you know, this film was the Star Wars film that I've been waiting for, you know, to really
it's definitely
light my fire.
It's definitely the same for me. Like, I feel like I waited all my life to get to experience this story, and I'm going to fall right in line with you and also give this film an 8 out of 10. I was absolutely blown away with it, and this probably toppled my number one spot for best film that's come out this year.
Wow. I haven't compiled my best of list. That's going to be the week after this episode drops, right before the new year.
It's been such a disappointing year for movies. So
it has been in terms of blockbusters, but there's also been a lot of smaller films that were fantastic. Yeah. Like, I saw The Nice Guys over the summer. That film was fantastic. I saw.
Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of live in a more
smaller
market, so I don't get to see a lot of those really cool.
I complain about living in films. I complain about living in a small market, but Jesus Christ, yeah.
We get like 3 or 4 movies at our local theater at a time, and it's always just whatever's the biggest blockbuster. So
yeah, which is kind of sad. Well,
I don't know if we even got Arrival. I think it was here for a week, maybe. And Hacksaw Ridge didn't come at all, which I was really disappointed about.
Oh, that is disappointing. That's a fantastic film. Absolutely fantastic film. Well, Caleb, that's it. That's pretty much everything. I want to thank you for...
Hey, you son of a bitch! Nah, I can't do the thing.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to get... Justin, we were talking about ways we were going to start using the Hobster more. Yesterday, and we were talking
why?
About well, he's gonna start calling other shows as the Hobster, and
oh nice,
we're gonna start using the Hobster to do like different promos and like cut different bits for different shows and stuff. Oh yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a good time. I can't wait. But no, I want to thank you for setting this time aside for me tonight. And of course, like I said, I've got to take, you know, bits and pieces of your audio. I won't use all of it, of course, but, you know, I'll take, you know, different parts of your audio in between the questions, and I'll just kind of fold it in there, and, you know, hopefully it'll all turn out good, but...
Time will tell. Well, I want to thank you for, you know, giving me the opportunity to come and do this with you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely my pleasure. So before we roll out on the show here, you are, of course, the co-host of the Netflix and Swell podcast, which, again... Mr. Director Krennic is also your co-host. Then, you know, why don't you just tell our audience, as if they don't already know, because we plug you guys every fucking week, but as if they don't already know, please tell our audience where they can find Netflix and Swill.
Well, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spreaker, I think. No, that doesn't seem right. What the fuck are we on? No, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and of course on Podbean. That's the one. And you can find us on Twitter at Netflix N Swill.
The letter N.
Not and, just the letter. Because Netflix and Swill was taken by some bastard.
Which is so weird, because that hashtag followed me, or that Twitter handle followed me at the same exact time that you guys did. When you
That's
guys
strange.
Created yours, that Twitter handle followed me. And then...
It's probably a robot.
It might be, but it's also never been used. I'm pretty sure it's still sitting unused. Which, I mean, you guys could probably petition to Twitter to get that handle if you wanted to. Because I know other shows...
Yeah,
I know Poop Culture...
I don't know, we've already branded ourselves.
Yeah. I know Poop Culture did it successfully because their original handle was The Poop Culture, but they wanted just Poop Culture, but somebody else had it but wasn't using it. It was just a dead handle. So they petitioned to Twitter to get it, and they got it. So...
Nice.
Yeah. You guys can actually do that at some point if you wanted to, but hey, either way. But yeah, I want to just... Yeah, thank you very much for joining me this evening, and... Like I said, I know you'll listen Thursday, so you get to see how badly I hack your words to shit.
Dude, I hope you just kind of clip it, like splice words together so it sounds like I'm saying something really offensive, but like but like it, you can tell that it's just a copy-pasted sentence where it doesn't flow at all.
Little bits.
Fuck the Mexicans.
They're raping all the Jyn Erso Star Wars.
Star Wars Rogue One was a piece of shit, fucker.
Star Wars Rogue One fucks white boys.
I like big white butts. Suck my dick. Suck my dick. Suck my dick, you fuck man. This motherfucker told me I had to eat his ass for a bag of coffee.
Rick and Morty Season 3 cannot come fast enough, I swear to God.
Ooh-wee!
This little poopy pants is hungry.
Is this what bleeding to death is? Ooh-wee!
I love the closing shot of that fucking episode with Beth in the fucking kitchen just shaking like crazy, pouring wine.
Pouring herself wine.
Oh my god.
911, yes, my wife shot a longtime family friend.
Send me to Gary. I want to be with Gary.
No, I need time to get over sleepy Gary.
Me too.
Maybe we'll see Chewbacca.
Oh, what are we doing?
We said never in the house.
Oh my god. But yeah, thank you. I guess we can stop recording now whenever you're ready.
Yeah, keep it rolling.